This is Jay Sekulow, big day in Washington, D.C., the confirmation of Mike Pompeo, Rick Grenell, and an analysis of the Supreme Court.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
We'll hear argument today in case 17-965. Donald Trump, President of the United States versus Hawaii.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
It now applies to only seven countries that fall below that baseline or had other problems, and it exerts diplomatic pressure on those countries to provide the needed information and to protect the country until they do.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
All right, well, we've got a lot to discuss today on the broadcast. Welcome, everybody. We'll take your calls at 800-684-3110. So Mike Pompeo has been pending as Secretary of State for 44 days, about 16 hours now. Rick Grenell has been pending as United States Ambassador to Germany for 233 days, 15 hours or so, about 16 hours now. I am happy to report, although we're not going to let up the pressure on this, that both Mike Pompeo and Rick Grenell are being voted on today. Now, why is that important? It's important to have our assets, our diplomatic assets, on the field as we engage on so many issues, that affect, including everything from the Middle East to the issues involving Pastor Brunson. Having diplomats in these various countries is very, very important. And I am very pleased that we've made progress on this to the point where there's actually going to be votes. Having said that, and having spent the last couple of days with Ann in Washington, I will tell you this, that we don't want to take anything for granted, especially as it relates to Ambassador-designate Rick Grenell. So, Fan, give us the update on that and what we need to do. And by the way, on this broadcast, we're going to take you inside the Supreme Court and we'll have full analysis, but you're going to actually hear the audio arguments of what was going on, and we're going to give you an analysis of it. But, Fan, tell everybody where we are on those two. It's very important for the American people to understand we're on the threshold of two big wins for these confirmations. Where are we?
And, Jay, we've been through this enough to know that at the last minute is not the time to let up. So where are we right now? The United States Senate, I'm actually watching it as I talk to you, has now turned to the confirmation vote of Mike Pompeo for Secretary of State. Just for people that are following this along, there will be two votes, Jay. One will be technically on the motion to invoke cloture, and then a final confirmation vote. We do expect him to pass pretty easily, as every Republican has stated they are for him, and at least three Democrats have stated they are for him. However, those are the votes that have to be taken first. And then, Jay, I think you're right. I think most of our attention needs to be focused on the votes that will start at 1:45 p.m. or thereabouts on Rick Grenell to be the ambassador to Germany. Again, two votes, one to invoke cloture and another on final confirmation. Jay, I'll just say one line on him. He is the longest serving spokesman at the United Nations, serving four different ambassadors. Very difficult to find someone more qualified. And guess what? We need a U.S. voice as our ambassador to Germany. We've been without one since the beginning of the Trump administration. It's time to confirm him.
Yeah. And so, folks, we want you to make those calls. Now, let me also tell you something about the U.N. today, which I didn't even have in the list. The U.N.'s working group on arbitrary detention has accepted, this is very rare, very unique, has accepted the case involving Andrew Brunson in Turkey. So that is a big deal, and that gives our ambassadors, once they're in place, even more to work with. So we're going to talk about all of that. And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. We're going to go inside the Supreme Court as well. So there is a lot of issues that we're dealing with. There's a lot we want to discuss, and we're going to give you some Supreme Court analysis. But I want to start with a little bit of a – to tell you how this is the case, of course, involving the president's executive order dealing with seven countries where there's concerns about their – individuals coming in that could not be properly vetted or did not meet our vetting requirements. We filed a brief in the case at the Supreme Court of the United States, both on the Establishment Clause issue, which is a big one here, the religion clause. In other words, these countries have predominantly Muslim populations, although 92% of the Muslim world is not impacted by this. But there was a very interesting argument about, or discussion about, well, what if the president decides, as he did, that we needed to file an attack in Syria? We do not be able to do that under the Establishment Clause because that is a majority Muslim country. We're going to talk about that when we come back from break. Lot of information here to share with you. Logan, we're also taking phone calls.
That's right. Phone lines are open at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110 to have your voice heard today. You can also join us live online broadcasting on Facebook.com/JaySekulow, Periscope and Twitter at JaySekulow. And you can find us broadcasting live there for the entire hour. But again, phone lines are open right now for your calls and your comments at 1-800-684-3110.
Don't forget the Matching Challenge campaign also. We're in the last few days of that at ACLJ.org. ACLJ.org. Back with more in a minute.
International threats are more dire than ever, yet our diplomatic corps is severely depleted. We must put maximum pressure on Congress to confirm critical appointments to our diplomatic corps. The United States doesn't have a confirmed Secretary of State. Numerous ambassadorships remain vacant. North Korea, Iran, Russia, an American pastor being wrongfully held in Turkey for his Christian faith. With these ominous threats, we must have a fully staffed diplomatic corps. The nominee to be Secretary of State, current CIA Director Mike Pompeo, is eminently qualified and must be confirmed immediately. The nominee to be Ambassador to Germany, a critical G7 nation, has been pending for more than 7 months. It's absurd. It's time for Congress to do its constitutional duty. Diplomatic deficiencies put our national security at risk. The political gamesmanship must end, but we need you and your support. Sign on to our petition to confirm the Secretary of State and our diplomatic corps. You can sign online at aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, the agenda Iran, Russia, and jihadists share for conquering the world. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. Taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. I have a general question for you. Let me see if you agree with this statement that we made in our brief to the Supreme Court of the United States. Here's what it says. The federal government's primary job is to keep the nation safe. The president's proclamation at issue here is designed to do just that. This is the enhanced vetting capabilities and process for detecting attempted entry into the United States by terrorists or other public safety threats. And do you agree with this statement? That the president has this authority. Do you agree with the statement the federal government's primary job is to keep the nation safe? Now, I think that's beyond dispute. And then the presidential proclamation at issue here is designed to do just that. Now, they attacked this on the religion clauses. Now, I've done, as most of you know, I've done a lot of cases over the 3 decades at the Supreme Court of the United States on the religion clauses. And one of the arguments that came up here was that by having the 7 countries listed, and that is Chad, Iran, Libya, North Korea, Somalia, Syria, Venezuela, and Yemen, that some of those countries have a majority of those countries that are listed have majority Muslim populations. And they actually have argued that that in and of itself violates the Establishment Clause. That's what the state of Hawaii argued. This actually came up in the oral argument. The Chief Justice of the United States gave a great hypothetical talking about the and this is the recent airstrike in Syria. Now, the airstrike in Syria was done to protect, stop the use of chemical weapons by the Assad regime. But it is a majority Muslim country. So now does the president's actions, it relates to his Article II authority, subject to a religion challenge? The answer has to be no. Here's what the Chief Justice said, bite number 53.
What if the military advisors tell the president that in their judgment, the president ought to order a strike, an airstrike against Syria? The president says, well, does that mean he can't because you would regard that as discrimination against a majority Muslim country?
Absolutely not. There's nothing to do with the text of the statute. The 1152 statute's about discrimination and the, quote, issuance of visas, and that's all that —
So under 1182F, you would say that there's no problem under that provision?
Under 1182, as I understood, it was a strike, and so I don't think there's any immigration issue in your hypothetical. I might be misunderstanding it, Mr. Chief Justice.
Well, yeah, you did. What you misunderstood was the fact that there cannot be an Establishment Clause violation if the commander-in-chief decides that military action to protect our nation or to protect citizens in other nations happens to involve a majority Muslim country. And again, this is no disrespect to Muslims, but here's the fact. This is where the problem is based. You cannot have a religion. The fact that you're even having an Establishment Clause discussion on this, frankly, I'll go to Professor Harry Hutchison, our Director of Policy, first on this, is a bit absurd.
Absolutely. The Supreme Court has consistently held that within the realm of national security and immigration law, that they will examine presidential action under a deferential standard. But even under a rigorous assessment of the Establishment Clause, there is clearly no violation here. Indeed, if the president was trying to issue an anti-Muslim ban, the proclamation which he issued fails miserably because it only includes about 8% of the Muslim population in the world.
Yeah, so
the challenger's argument is absolutely absurd on its face.
All right, so Wes, you're our senior military analyst. So let's look at this. Can you imagine, and you've been in these conflict zones, that you're having to make decisions, or your commanders, or you, or whoever it would be, having to make decisions, and the first thing we have to do from a judge advocate general is get a legal opinion as to whether this violates the Establishment Clause of the United States Constitution.
Absolutely insane, isn't it? For 3 years, I was the religious and culture advisor for Army Central Command, and part of my job was to talk about how religion would impact the mission, and the mission would impact religion. And this kind of tying the hands of commanders or the president simply never came up. I mean, there's a reason the Constitution puts foreign policy and the military under the authority of the president, and that's because foreign policy and the military directly impact national security, and you cannot put a religious test on that.
I thought that the Solicitor General actually had a very good response to this. This is a question from Justice Sotomayor, who's asking directly about the Establishment Clause, and by the way, our brief on that dealt exactly with that issue. Here's what she said, number 26.
Why much not an establishment clause?
Because, Your Honor, and the reason why I think they haven't pursued those types of claims is because I don't think they would possibly support the types of nationwide injunction that they're asking for. Your Honor, the reason why I don't think that they could bring an establishment clause claim is because the proclamation doesn't actually apply to the respondents. It only applies to aliens abroad who have no constitutional right to enter.
So I think it's very important to understand, Andy, that you don't have a constitutional right. We're talking about the Constitution here. And look, I'm the grandson of a Russian immigrant. I say that often on this broadcast. So I'm glad that we have immigration in the United States, or my family wouldn't have been here. And I think we got to do it through an orderly process. I believe in, as I said, comprehensive immigration reform, but I want border security and I want vetting. I want to know who's here and why they're here. However, having said all of that, the fact that we are arguing an Establishment Clause case here, Andy, which is our expertise, I will say, is not a bit absurd, as I said to Harry. This is the fact that this is the view and analysis that we're having to deal with shows the fundamental misunderstanding of Article II power of the President of the United States as here as Commander in Chief.
That's right, Jay. And you say that you're the son, a grandson of Russian immigrants. I am the grandson on both sides of Greek immigrants. We favor immigration. We want it, but we want it done responsibly. And that responsibility under our Constitution, Article 2, lies with the President of the United States, okay? This is not a proclamation that discriminates against people because of their religion or goes against the constitutional prohibition against the establishment of a religion. This is, and I have said this tongue-in-cheek many times, part of the two things that I think government should do, and that is defend the country and deliver the mail.
There you go. Also, Chief Justice Roberts raised that issue. I gave you the example about Syria. Let's go back inside the Supreme Court. This is number 54. Let me tell you what the issue here is. This is the idea, what they're arguing is targeted action. Here you've targeted a number of countries, not all of which, but many of which, have a majority Muslim population. Again, it's not disparaging Muslims. It's just the fact of where the individuals are coming from. The reason that the fact that that's an issue is because that one of the claims here, it violates the Establishment Clause. Listen to the Chief Justice Don Roberts, who, by the way, I've had the privilege of appearing before, but also arguing cases with and even against a couple times. Bite number 54.
Any type of targeted action that would have an impact on the Muslim population.
Absolutely. We think the president has wide authorities to do things that have impacts on the Muslim population, take the laptop ban.
Why, under your theory, wouldn't that constitute, or the argument would be, that that's discrimination under your Establishment Clause argument, that that's discrimination on the basis of faith, because he has said in the past, if you accept the arguments, that he is anti-Muslim.
Not at all, Your Honor, and that no president has run afoul of this, you know, and that's because here the president and his advisors have directly tied this policy to those statements. And the red brief at page 70, I think, is the greatest illustration of that.
Okay, so here's what you have. So they are arguing two things there. One, it violates the religion clauses, which, as I told you, I think is ridiculous, and we've pointed that out in our brief. And then they also go into the political statements or statements the president made while on the campaign trail as if that somehow would bootstrap his executive action. But what is so absurd about the argument is that the in this particular case, the lawyer representing the state of Hawaii, who's a very good lawyer, his argument comes down to this. Because what the president said during the campaign trail, therefore, in campaign statements, we could take that, apply those to the executive order, and because of that, the executive order is, in fact, unconstitutional. If the same executive order was written by President Obama, or if it was would have been President Clinton, there wouldn't have been a constitutional problem. I mean, you talk about a creative, and we'll get into this in a moment, but then you're there in Washington. I mean, the idea that the campaign statements would now be used to nullify an executive order would really destroy the balance between the three branches of government.
It's just ridiculous, Jay. I mean, first of all, you start with the conclusion. It's no great shock that some of our greatest threats are coming from the Islamic world, right? But we don't have to guess what the motive is here, because the presidential proclamation tells us specifically what three criteria were used, and nothing about religion or, for that matter, campaign statements are in there. The most obvious one is if it's a known terrorist safe haven, a very clear criteria. And the other two, Jay, have to deal with whether or not that country is cooperating with the United States. So, you know, the court or those who are challenging this looking to campaign statements as opposed to the clear text of the legal proclamation that was made. Jay, I can't tell you how dangerous that is. We have the criteria that were used. And by the way, it's no real surprise that the 7 and then the 8 that is partially excluded ended up on that list. I think most people would look at that list and say, yep, those are problematic areas.
All right, we're going to take your calls at 1-800-684-3110. We come back from the break, 800-684-3110, taking you inside the Supreme Court of the United States. It's kind of a unique thing, something that I've done in that building a number of times over 3 decades. But now we're going to give you full analysis on this. We'll be joined by our team in just a moment. We come back from the break. Logan?
That's right. Phone lines are open for your calls and your questions at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. To have your voice heard today, it's time to give us a call. If you're watching online, you can always get your comments in through Facebook. And know that even if you don't make it on the air with your comments, because we get thousands upon thousands each and every day, some of our social media teams read those comments, every comment, so your voice is being heard. But if you really want your voice to be heard, millions of people around the world, give us a call. 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
Literally around the world.
Around the world?
Yep.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com.
International threats are more dire than ever, yet our diplomatic corps is severely depleted. We must put maximum pressure on Congress to confirm critical appointments to our diplomatic corps. The United States doesn't have a confirmed Secretary of State. Numerous ambassadorships remain vacant. North Korea, Iran, Russia, an American pastor being wrongfully held in Turkey for his Christian faith. With these ominous threats, we must have a fully staffed diplomatic corps. The nominee to be Secretary of State, current CIA Director Mike Pompeo, is eminently qualified and must be confirmed immediately. The nominee to be Ambassador to Germany, a critical G7 nation, has been pending for more than 7 months. It's absurd. It's time for Congress to do its constitutional duty. Diplomatic deficiencies put our national security at risk. The political gamesmanship must end, but we need you and your support.
Sign on to our petition to confirm the Secretary of State and our diplomatic corps. You can sign online at aclj.org.
Back, everybody. We're taking you, it's a very unique program. We're taking you inside the Supreme Court of the United States as it relates to the case involving the president's order, which is titled Enhancing Vetting Capabilities and Processes for Detecting Attempted Entry into the United States. We wrote in our brief that the federal government's primary job is to keep this nation safe. The presidential proclamation issue here does just that. We also asserted that there is no violation of the Establishment Clause. And Wes Smith, from a military standpoint, you said it earlier, I think it's worth repeating. You handled the interreligious and cultural issues as a colonel in the United States Army. But could you imagine making the decision of whether your colleagues were going to do a strike in a village, but because it's this percentage Christian and this percentage Yazidi and this percentage Muslim, gee, maybe we can't do that because that might look like we're focusing on that religion.
Right. It would be an absolute zoo. And I think if we tried to do our foreign policy this way, it becomes an absolute zoo as well, because you can't make national security decisions based on the religious population of a country.
All right, let's go ahead and take a phone call, Logan. I've got a hard question for Dr. Andrew Economo.
All right.
You better be ready.
Let's go to Mary Ellen in Chicago, Illinois. You're on the air, Mary Ellen.
Hey, Mary Ellen, go ahead.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
As I'm listening to these arguments, I hear that the challengers are making religion number one priority versus
right.
security. They're making that secondary, and
yep.
that's diminishing the executive branch's rightful authority.
No, you're 100% correct. And what they've done is they there's no way under the Constitution, and we're going to get to this in a moment because they actually say this, that they take the president's statements when he was running for office, they put him with when he was a candidate, they put him with the executive order, and to them, that plus that equals a constitutional violation. If you take out the previous statements when he was running for office and just had the proclamation as proclamation, Andy, that would be, in fact, okay. And they say that. So the same proclamation by President Obama or President Clinton or President George W. Bush, in their view, would be constitutional. But because the president made statements about this while he was running for office and actually did what he said he was going to do in executing this, right. that they say is a constitutional violation.
Yeah, and if you look at what Chief Justice Roberts said, he asks Mr. Katyal, who represents the state of Hawaii, so if tomorrow the president issues a proclamation saying he's disavowing all the statements he made, that is President Trump's statements, then the next day he can reenter the proclamation. And if you go down, Mr. Katyal finally, after being prodded a little bit, says, yes, the answer is absolutely. So when you're a private citizen running for office and you make a statement with respect to certain things that you then later disavow, then it's okay to issue the proclamation. But if you don't disavow those statements after you become chief executive, it's not.
So let me take you back inside the courtroom for that exact line of questioning. This is number 70.
So if tomorrow he issues a proclamation saying he's disavowing all those statements, then the next day he can reenter this proclamation?
That's exactly what this court said in McCreary. This court in McCreary said, you know, the same policy can be constitutional if promulgated by one entity and not by another, depending on the circumstances around it.
Is your answer to my question yes?
Yes. The
tomorrow
answer is
he issues a proclamation disavowing those statements.
Absolutely.
The next day he can reenter this, and your discrimination argument would not be applicable.
And Mr. Chief Justice, that's exactly what I told the Ninth Circuit in May. The president didn't do that.
Okay, well, wait a minute. So, and he's a very good lawyer, by the way. Both sides were well represented. I want to say that. I know him. I know both of them. They're excellent Supreme Court advocates. But, I mean, think about what they just said. If the president would say, I disavow what I said during the campaign, so here's my order, the challengers, the state of Hawaii, Harry, is saying, that's okay then. It's constitutional. So we're going to determine the constitutionality of an order based on statements, not when the president was president, but when the person was running for office. So we don't judge it by the document itself, and it would be fine the next day. So we're putting our national security at risk based on campaign statements.
Absolutely. So Katyal's argument is incredibly weak, and so his case must indeed collapse. It's important to note that the Supreme Court has stressed in the Zavatovsky case that when a president's action is authorized by Congress, it's at its maximum authority.
Right.
In other words, President Trump has both statutory and constitutional authority to issue the proclamation,
which
independent of the anti-discrimination principle. That's number one. Number two, Katyal is confused in terms of his statutory analysis. He relies on Section 1152. That refers to immigrant visas. 1182F refers to the admission of all individuals. That's where the president's authority comes from, and it is not subject to an anti-discrimination principle.
So you have both a statutory recognition of the president's authority. On top of that, you have a constitutional recognition under the Article II powers of the president.
Right.
So that in and of itself should have been the end of case. Now, look, the Ninth Circuit ruled in favor of the state of Hawaii. Let me tell you, somebody that's litigated at the Supreme Court a lot. I've won cases at the Ninth Circuit. I've lost cases at the Ninth Circuit. Let me tell you what happens when you take that up to the Supreme Court. About 90% of the time. About 90% of the time, you're going to be reversed. I think that's what's going to happen here. Looks like it could be 6-3, 5-4. We'll get into more of that analysis. But Andy, you just said that's right, because there is no real argument on what Harry said. Is actually, I like the way you said it, but it's rather unremarkable. There's statutory and constitutional authority to do this.
Right.
A pre-election campaign statement should have nothing to do with it.
Absolutely nothing to do with it whatsoever, because he was a private citizen making statements that you make on the campaign trail, sometimes advised, sometimes ill-advised. The point is, after he became president and he made a finding that there were seven countries that do not vet their people in the proper fashion, should we preclude them from coming? And it just happened that they were majority Muslim. Does it mean that that proclamation is unconstitutional? The answer is certainly not.
So to exactly that point, the Solicitor General of the United States and Solicitor General Noel Francisco, who is another, both of these lawyers are excellent, by the way. The fact that the lawyers on the other side of an issue, by the way, doesn't mean that they're not good lawyers. I think these are very good Supreme Court advocates. But listen to what he said, Byte 81.
1152A1A addresses one thing, the issuance of immigrant visas. It doesn't address the broader question over whether somebody is allowed to enter in the first place. That's governed by 1182, including 1182F. So essentially, 1182 sets the universe of people who are eligible to come into the country in the first place, and that is often a foreign policy and national security judgment. 1152A1A is one of the rules that governs how we distribute visas amongst that group that's eligible to come in. And it's not just nationality-based distinctions that it applies to. It also applies to things like place of residence. So once you have that universe of eligible people, 1152A1A governs how you distribute them.
All right. So I think that gives you a—and by the way, I think that was a great response. We've got a lot more on this ahead. To me, it's a fascinating broadcast. We're taking inside the Supreme Court to give you an analysis of what's exactly at play here. Let me give a quick update here as we are closing this half hour of the broadcast out. What is the latest, Stan, on where we are with both Grinnell and Pompeo as of right now as we're live?
Yeah, Jay, Mike Pompeo has just cleared the 50-vote margin on the motion to invoke cloture. The vote is right now 52-39, so that means that Mike Pompeo is going to be the next Secretary of State of the United States.
Do I understand that Senator Jones from Alabama, Democrat, is going to vote in favor of Mike Pompeo?
That is my understanding. I cannot hear the audio of the roll call, but it is my understanding, Jay. So I think he will get to 54.
You can't hear it and do the radio broadcast at the same time. There you go.
Correct.
All right, Logan, let everybody know they get the next 30 minutes of the broadcast.
That's right. If you don't get on your local station, you can find us broadcasting live, Facebook.com/JSecculo, Periscope and Twitter @JSecculo, and on ACLJ.org. You can also get the show on the ACLJ app, available in the App Store for Apple devices, iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, as well as in the Roku channel marketplace. And subscribe to the JSecculo Live podcast on iTunes or however you get your podcasts. We'll be right back.
International threats are more dire than ever, yet our diplomatic corps is severely depleted. We must put maximum pressure on Congress to confirm critical appointments to our diplomatic corps. It's time for Congress to do its constitutional duty. Diplomatic deficiencies put our national security at risk. The political gamesmanship must end, but we need you and your support. Sign on to our petition to confirm the Secretary of State and our diplomatic corps. You can sign online at aclj.org.
I'd play the whole song if I had time. We don't. Supreme Court of the United States. This is what we argued in our brief that was filed on the issue of what is technically called the Enhancing Vetting Capabilities and Process of Retaining Attempted Entry into the United States. That's the vetting of the various countries that were listed. This is what we said. The proclamation meets the deferential standards applicable to the immigration policy making and enforcement decisions of the political branches. Judicial review of the immigration-related actions of the political branches has to be based on deference to the executive. The proclamation is constitutional under this court's deferential standards applicable to challenges to the political branch's immigration-related activities. We also got into what became a big part of the argument, which is the Establishment Clause issue. The proclamation is constitutional, we wrote, even under a traditional Establishment Clause analysis. That became a big part of the discussion. So let me get everybody's quick analysis of the case. I'm going to start with Andy Economo. Your sense of the president's issue as it relates to the enhanced screening, constitutional or not, based on what you've reviewed in the Supreme Court argument?
It is constitutional, Jay, and he was well within the authority that he has under Article 2 of the Constitution to do exactly what he did.
Wes?
If you look at the text of this proclamation that has become so controversial, the requirements not to be on this list is that maintain a modern identity system for your population, share criminal and terrorist information with the U.S., and not be a safe haven for terrorists. The countries on this list, not one of them do this, and that's why they're on the list.
By the way, we should say this, R. Wes Smith, congratulations on receiving a Master's of Law degree.
Thank you, sir.
From Regent University. It was a beautiful degree. When did you award it? In December, technically?
Right, December 16th.
But you got the nice degree today.
Yes.
Harry, professor of law at George Mason University for many years. Your analysis of the Supreme Court. I'll give you mine at the end here, but I want yours.
This proclamation by President Trump is easily constitutional under the most exacting standards. So if you look at the relevant statutory language from the Immigration and Nationality Act, or if you look at the relevant constitutional provisions, the president is clearly within his authority to issue this proclamation, and the Establishment Clause claim is bogus.
All right, so let's take some phone calls. We've got people been holding for a long time. 1-800-684-3110. We want your comments on this. Logan, let's go ahead and take one.
All right, let's go to Brenda in Indiana first. Brenda, you're on the air.
Hi, Brenda, go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to ask, yesterday in the comments, someone mentioned that there was a statute that could be invoked to force the judiciary to follow the Constitution. Sometimes they come out with decisions that we don't think maybe are constitutional. I just wanted to know what that was.
Well, I heard people say that, but it's actually not correct. The Supreme Court of the United States determines the constitutionality of statutes. It's been that way since the case of Marbury versus Madison. The judicial review of the constitutionality of an executive order or of a statute applies, is done at the Supreme Court. So when I argue cases at the Supreme Court, that's what you're dealing with, as it should be. Those are life appointments, what I think is the right thing that it should be, so that they're outside of the political branches of government. That's how we have checks and balances, but we also have separation of powers, three branches of government. By the way, in this particular case, all three branches end up being engaged. Why is that? There was a statutory issue as it related to the president having the authority to do the enhanced vetting of people coming in from designated countries. There's the constitutional basis of the president as both the chief executive commander-in-chief under Article 2, and then you now have judicial review, which is Article 3. So I always think it's important to point out that's the way in which the Constitution is structured. And if you don't allow that to operate, I think it's not good for the country. All right, we're going to go take a break. Before we do, I want to get an update from Fan, if there is one, in Washington, D.C., on the Pompeo and Grinnell nominations.
Mike Pompeo, Jay, the final tally was 57 to 42, so at least seven Democrats voted for Mike Pompeo. Now they will vote on final confirmation, and in a matter of minutes, he'll be the Secretary of State.
All right, there you go. We'll have more on that when we come back from the break. We'll take your calls as well.
That's right, 1-800-684-3110. And if you're watching online, exclusive videos play during the break, or we continue the conversation. No commercials if you're watching online. It's at ACLJ.org, Facebook.com/JaySekulow, or Twitter and Periscope @JaySekulow. So again, exclusive video coming up in this break made by our video team. They do a great job each and every day at these exclusive videos. So take a look.
International threats are more dire than ever, yet our diplomatic corps is severely depleted. We must put maximum pressure on Congress to confirm critical appointments to our diplomatic corps. The United States doesn't have a confirmed Secretary of State. Numerous ambassadorships remain vacant. North Korea, Iran, Russia, an American pastor being wrongfully held in Turkey for his Christian faith. With these ominous threats, we must have a fully staffed diplomatic corps. The nominee to be Secretary of State, current CIA Director Mike Pompeo, is eminently qualified and must be confirmed immediately. The nominee to be Ambassador to Germany, a critical G7 nation, has been pending for more than 7 months. It's absurd. It's time for Congress to do its constitutional duty. Diplomatic deficiencies put our national security at risk. The political gamesmanship must end, but we need you and your support. Sign on to our petition to confirm the Secretary of State and our diplomatic corps. You can sign online at aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're talking about the president's proclamation on enhanced vetting on entry into the United States. We filed a brief for the American Center for Law and Justice in support of the president's legal authority under the Constitution. I'm actually holding in my hand a copy of that brief. It is, as I said yesterday, these are bound briefs that you file. This is called a brief amicus curiae, or friend of the court. This one was in favor of the petitioners and urging reversal, because the Ninth Circuit held that the order was unconstitutional, basically on the Establishment Clause. And I said I've got a lot of experience. I've argued Establishment Clause cases at the Supreme Court for over three decades. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. They're arguing that one of the issues at play here is that you have a predominantly Muslim countries that are on this list, not all of them, and therefore this is targeted as an act of discrimination. And they try to tie in President's statements while he was on the campaign trail. Here's what Justice Alito said. This is Byte 71. I want you to listen carefully.
I mean, there are 50 predominantly Muslim countries in the world. Five predominantly Muslim countries are on this list. The population of the predominantly Muslim countries on this list make up about 8% of the world's Muslim population. If you looked at the 10 countries with the most Muslims, exactly one, Iran, would be on that list of the top 10. So would a reasonable observer think this was a Muslim ban?
If it were just the text of the order alone, it might raise eyebrows for fit and other reasons that the briefs go into, but we wouldn't be here. We absolutely agree that it's the same test as in Lukumi and other cases. You have to look to all the circumstances around it.
I mean, here's the danger of what and by the way, Cattell's a former Solicitor General, a very good lawyer. But here's the danger in what he's saying: that you take political statements that remain on a campaign trail, and then if that person happens to become president of the United States, which here he did, and then you apply that analysis that he's suggesting, you take statements on the campaign trail, apply it to the actual actions of what happened as president, and you could have a violation of the Establishment Clause. That, Andy, has to be fundamentally incorrect as a matter of law.
It is incorrect. You cannot say that you can transfer the statements that are made in the campaign to a ban or a prohibition against the president exercising his constitutional authority after that person becomes president under the Constitution in Article 2 to deal with matters of foreign policy and defense of our country. That is not a valid argument.
And by the way, Justice Alito points that out. I'll play that in a moment. But let's go ahead. We're taking your calls, by the way. We want to get your opinion on all of this. 1-800-684-3110. What do you think about the president's attempt to enhance the vetting of coming into the United States from these designated countries. We're talking about the constitutionality of that. It raises the religion clauses, interestingly, here. We'll take your calls at 800-684-3110. We'll take comments as well. Logan, what do we have next?
Let's go to Chris in Reno, Nevada, on line 5. You're on the air.
Hey, Chris.
Hi. To me, what may have been the most important and overlooked point was when Justice Gorsuch questioned how one district court judge could stay an executive order nationwide.
Well, look, that is always a situation where you've got the reach of the district court going further than it perhaps is authorized to under the Constitution and under court analysis. Now, I think we actually have that bite where he talks about that, and we're going to pull that up for you in a moment. But you raise a really important point, and that is, how could a district court judge sitting in Hawaii strike down an order for the entire country? And let me put it another way. That judge says it's unconstitutional. This judge says it is. Is there this extraterritorial reach? So we have that soundbite on that. Well, let's go ahead and play that.
We have this troubling rise of this nationwide injunction, cosmic injunction, not limited to relief for the parties at issue or even a class action. Right. And near as I can tell, that's a really new development where a district court asserts the right to strike down a federal statute with regard to anybody anywhere in the world. Yeah. What do we do about that?
Obviously, the injunction here has been trimmed by this court itself and others. And I do think I share your impulse, Justice Gorsuch. That's something that I think lower courts are debating right now in a number of different contexts, like the contraception case and the like. I think this case is the poorest example to get into it because of United States versus Texas's point, which is this is an immigration case. And Article 1, Section 8 puts Congress in the driver's seat and says there must be a uniform rule of naturalization. So I think for those reasons, you know, I get why the court might want to get into it. Getting into it here, I think, in the Supreme Court probably doesn't make a tremendous amount of sense.
So here's the question that I raised, too, and this is something else Justice Gorsuch raised, Harry, and that is proceeding on the assumption that they can even reach the merits in the first place, that the people raising the claims, basically this lack of standing, we'll get into it, but it's very important on who can raise these claims in the first place.
Absolutely.
That's a threshold issue. When you have a case at the Supreme Court of the United States, the first thing they'll ask you is, who has legal standing to challenge this?
Absolutely. And it is part of U.S. sovereignty to exclude non-resident, non-citizens from constitutional redress. So individuals currently living abroad have zero constitutional rights within the United States. So if we look at the president's proclamation, it was narrowly tailored. It's also important to note that President Carter and President Reagan have issued similar proclamations in the past without challenge, and Supreme Court precedent is clearly deferential to both the president and Congress in this arena.
So, Than Bennett, you've done political campaigns in your life. The idea that the statements made before a campaign, now while the candidate's campaigning, becomes the basis upon which a law could be struck as unconstitutional, would, I think, send not only chills down First Amendment advocates, but those that are running political campaigns.
Well, it'd be incredibly chilling, and quite frankly, Jay, it would threaten the very rule of law, because you heard the attorney articulate and concede that the text of the proclamation was, in fact, constitutional. So why you have to go any past that is beyond me. But, Jay, one other point I would make, and you, the conversation you just had, you addressed this exact point back in December of 2014 when you were in front of the House Judiciary Committee on the DACA issue, actually, and you were very careful to defend the president's authority when it came to foreign affairs. I want to read you one line from that testimony. I want people to listen to this. Jay, in front of the House Judiciary Committee in December of 2014, he said, "While the court has clearly articulated that Congress has exclusive authority to set immigration policy, the Supreme Court has expressed that the president has inherent authority over immigration-related matters that influence the nation's sovereignty and foreign affairs." So, Jay, even when we were talking about the president's, President Obama's effort to usurp Congress's authority to write immigration law, you knew back then that it was important to carve out and remind people of the president's authority when it comes to foreign affairs. I feel like we've come full circle, right? Now they're arguing the other side of that.
So this became in the context of when the president, President Obama, was trying to change the immigration law. He acknowledged, he said, remember the famously said, "I'm not a king"? But it's the same, it's kind of the reverse side of this. So here's what I said at the House Judiciary testimony back on December 2nd of 2014.
Presidents cannot change the law. He can't do so constitutionally. He cannot do so under Supreme Court precedent. He can't change the law to comport with his preferred public policy, much of which I share. The president's executive action really disrupts the delicate balance of separation of powers that is the hallmark of our constitutional framework.
That's really what this case is about, Harry. I mean, when we think about that, I mean, that's it's about the Constitution.
Absolutely. So the president has Article II powers, the Congress has Article I powers, and Congress has delegated powers within the immigration and foreign policy arena to the president. And the president has clearly exercised those powers in compliance with the Constitution. And the basis of the challenger's claim, which is grounded largely in Section 1152 of the Immigration Nationality Act, is groundless.
Let me play. This is, Harry earlier referenced that President Carter, President Reagan had done similar things. That actually came up in the oral argument. Listen to number 10.
And that's what this proclamation really does go to, making sure we have that minimum baseline of information needed to determine admissibility. And so the proclamation really does reflect it is different than past proclamations, but it is typical in the sense that it seeks to identify harmful conduct that a foreign government is engaging in, and then it imposes sanctions in order to pressure that government to change. That's what President Carter did with respect to Iran, what President Reagan did with respect to Cuba.
So these are not decided in a vacuum here. And I think it's important, Andy, to understand that there is precedent for presidential, besides the Article II power. And here you've got a statutory base as well. There's historical precedent.
Well, there is precedent. And the Solicitor General aptly and correctly stated what that precedent was, what precedent is. We want to identify harmful conduct that a foreign government is engaging in to pressure them to change that, but we also want to keep that harmful conduct out of the confines and the boundaries of the United States. Jimmy Carter did that with respect to Iran. President Reagan did it with respect to Cuba in connection with the bans or the restrictions that they put in their proclamations. Why shouldn't President Trump be allowed to exercise that same constitutional authority?
The answer is he should. We're going to be taking your calls when we come back from the break. We encourage you to continue to listen. We've got a lot more to discuss in this last segment. We'll take the calls.
We take as many calls as we can in that last segment. So if you've been wanting to call in, this is a great time to do it. We have some phone lines open for you. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Again, to have your voice heard today, we have phone lines open. If you've wanted to call in, it's a great time to do it. You can still get your comments in. We may take some of those as well. But if you want to get your voice on the air, again, 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com.
International threats are more dire than ever, yet our diplomatic corps is severely depleted. We must put maximum pressure on Congress to confirm critical appointments to our diplomatic corps. The United States doesn't have a confirmed Secretary of State. Numerous ambassadorships remain vacant. North Korea, Iran, Russia, an American pastor being wrongfully held in Turkey for his Christian faith. With these ominous threats, we must have a fully staffed diplomatic corps. The nominee to be Secretary of State, current CIA Director Mike Pompeo, is eminently qualified and must be confirmed immediately. The nominee to be Ambassador to Germany, a critical G7 nation, has been pending for more than 7 months. It's absurd. It's time for Congress to do its constitutional duty. Diplomatic deficiencies put our national security at risk. The political gamesmanship must end, but we need you and your support. Sign on to our petition to confirm the Secretary of State and our diplomatic corps. You can sign online at aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. I want to go right to Washington, D.C. Our studio's there. Than Bennett's got an update for us on Mike Pompeo, I believe.
Yeah, Jay, Mike Pompeo just got his 50th yes vote on the floor of the United States Senate. So while the vote is still open, a few senators still to cast their vote, he is the Secretary of State of the United States.
I got to tell you something. I'm happy about that. Mike Pompeo is a friend. He is someone that we've had the privilege. He's been on this broadcast a lot over the years. I knew him in Congress, of course, great director of the CIA, and now the Secretary of State as we enter into negotiations with North Korea. I think he's a great pick. He's also someone that is fully aware of the situation with Pastor Andrew Brunson. And as I said early in the broadcast, we got some good news on that out of the United Nations. We're working every stream we can on this. That included the working group on arbitrary detention, taking the case. That's significant. I'll go back to Than on this because, and Than's our UN representative, because that doesn't happen. I mean, it's like a handful of cases a year.
Right. Well, and to be successful in this, Jay, the rest of the world has to join with the United States in isolating Turkey for this. So this move is very critical in that. I would just add one other thing to this. We got to make sure that allies like Germany join in that squeeze. And in order to do that, the United States has to have a voice in Germany making that case. We know that Rick Grenell is aware of this case. Jay, the two votes on him are going to begin at 1:45 p.m., just as we predicted. When Leader McConnell forced the issue, Democrats said, we'll vote on him before we leave town. So that's next up. We need Germany to join the United Nations in isolating Turkey over Pastor Brunson.
I talked with the ambassador-designate, Rick Grenell, about the situation with Pastor Brunson. He's very concerned about it, as is the administration generally. I've had the opportunity to talk with the president and vice president about his case over the last year, and they've been very assertive. And I will tell you, Mike Pompeo is aware of it as well. So all of this, I think, is very, very positive. All right, we need to go back and take some calls at 1-800-684-3110.
That's right. Glenn's calling in New Jersey on line one. Give it, you're on the air, Glenn.
Hi, Glenn.
Hi, guys. A somewhat simple question, I think, to me. The Constitution applies to the United States of America. How can a guy try and take the Constitution and apply it to Yemen or Iran or North Korea?
Well, one of the arguments we asserted is that you don't have a constitutional right to entry into the United States. And that's a rather unremarkable position. I mean, now, as I said, I'm a grandson of a Russian immigrant, so I'm very glad that my family was allowed in, and there's a process that we have. But to say that there's a constitutional right to entry, Harry, would be is fundamentally incorrect, and in and of itself would violate the Constitution.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, when I say that, because there's no constitutional basis for that.
The power to expel or exclude is a fundamental sovereign right possessed by the United States, and we are not compelled to grant constitutional rights to aliens.
There you
go. It's as simple as that.
Let's go right back to those phones at 1-800-684-3110. We like to do that in the last segment.
All right, let's go to Rick in Indiana on line three.
Hey, Rick.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Thank you guys for all you do. My question is, this is pretty obvious. It should have never gone this far. It's going to rule in Trump's favor, but how fast does this affect? Do they adjourn and come back in June, or just
let me tell you what happens. So this was one of the last arguments of the term. The case was Wednesday, so generally they will either vote Wednesday on the case. They actually go back into chambers and oftentimes will vote that afternoon on the case, or sometimes they'll vote on Friday. They actually take the vote. Then the Chief Justice, who was ever in the majority, assigns the opinion if he's in the majority, and then the opinions are circulated. That's what will take the time between now and the end of June, when the Supreme Court ends its session, which is generally towards the last week of June. That's when a decision would come out in a situation like this. But I think it was interesting. We talked earlier about this idea that Reagan and Carter had issued these proclamations. A key vote in this case is Justice Kennedy, as often as he actually addressed that in bite number 12.
If you compare this proclamation to the Reagan and the Carter proclamations, which I think were one or two sentences, this is longer than any proclamation that I've seen in this particular area.
This is, Your Honor, the most detailed 1182.
Detailed, yes. is a better word.
Yes, this is the more detailed 1182F proclamation in history.
Okay, now, oftentimes the justices will argue with each other through the lawyers. That's exactly what happened here after Justice Kennedy said that. Then Justice Sotomayor came in by 13.
General, the proclamations by Reagan and Carter, however, were not as broad as this one.
Your Honor, they were almost as broad, but to complete my answer to Justice Kennedy's question, this is the most detailed proclamation ever issued in American history. Yes, Your Honor, to be sure, this covers more countries than either President Reagan's or President Carter's covered.
And more, and more immigrants, because Carter's only applied to certain immigrants, not to all.
President Carter's actually applied to all immigrants, but then had an exception, much like the waiver provision here, for national interests and humanitarian concerns. So I think President Carter's was actually very similar to the proclamation here.
So there you have it. I mean, I think that was a great oral argument. I'm glad on the broadcast they would be able to take you inside all of this. But I go back to the fundamental issue I raised at the beginning, and that was when the Chief Justice talked about a Syrian airstrike and a religion clause argument about an airstrike. And Wes, as the military representative here, that would be fundamentally change the shift of authority for battlefield commanders.
Oh, absolutely. It would create chaos and confusion, and it would do the same thing in immigration and foreign policy. What was President Carter dealing with Iran? National security. What was Reagan dealing with his order? Cuba. National security. The heart of this matter, even though it's an immigration policy, is national security.
Andy, when you look at this from a constitutional perspective, it really isn't a hard case.
It isn't, Jay. The basic rule is that the exclusion of aliens is a political act imbued with foreign policy and national security concerns. That's straight from the Solicitor General's argument, and hence it is a matter constitutionally committed to the power of the President of the United States. Article 2, Constitution, period.
There you go. All right, let's take the last caller for the broadcast.
All right, Gene's calling from Joshua Tree, California. You're on the air.
All right. Hi, Gene.
Hi there. I have basically a statement. President Trump made a statement while he was still a citizen.
Yes.
He was not privy to all the information. After he became president, he got all the information, and he changed his stand on immigration. He made an educated proclamation on immigration. What's the matter with that? I change my mind every other day.
Well, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, constitutionally, you're absolutely correct. What the state of Hawaii is trying to assert is that you take campaign statements and apply them to actually when the candidate is no longer a candidate, but is the actual president. And it's as if you can't shift your policy or have other justifications for that policy. It would be a terrible precedent. I think the Supreme Court's going to overwhelmingly reject that. And I go back to Than on that, the idea that that would be an issue on political campaigns, very dangerous precedent that would stay basically on free speech as well.
Yeah, well, American voters would not get unfiltered content from their candidates nearly to the extent, Jay, because they'd be running everything through that filter. But in doing so, in the same breath, and I think this is important to leave people with, in the same breath that he said that, the attorney for Hawaii admitted that the actual words of the proclamation, Jay, are constitutional. I think at the end of the day, that's what the court's going to look at, and they're going to find this proclamation to be constitutional. Jay, vote on Pompeo, 56-42, about to close.
The next Secretary of State of the United States is minutes away from confirmation. That is great news for the United States of America. Bipartisan support, that is great as well. That is going to do it for the broadcast today. Don't forget our matching challenge at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. And Logan, you'll let people know how they can stay fully engaged with us throughout the week.
That's right. You can find all the information, breaking news, blogs, news pieces, a lot of great information, a lot of resources and petitions available on ACLJ.org. Make sure you're following us on all social media, Facebook, Twitter, at Jay Sekulow, at ACLJ. You can find us on all those outlets. Download the ACLJ app. It's probably the easiest way to sign each and every petition and be involved. And find us broadcasting here each and every day live.
All right.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Much. Yeah.
International threats are more dire than ever, yet our diplomatic corps is severely depleted. We must put maximum pressure on Congress to confirm critical appointments to our diplomatic corps. It's time for Congress to do its constitutional duty. Diplomatic deficiencies put our national security at risk. The political gamesmanship must end, but we need you and your support. Sign on to our petition to confirm the Secretary of State and our diplomatic corps. You can sign online at ACLJ.org.